And I saw when the Lamb opened one of the seals, and I heard, as it were, the noise of thunder, saying, "Come and see."
Noise of Thunder Radio with Christian J. Pinto.
Okay, praise the Lord, you guys, and welcome. I'm Chris Pinto. This is Noise of Thunder Radio. Today on the show, we are going to talk about the Jesuits, Black Lives Matter, and what I consider to be the American gunpowder plot. The things that we've uncovered now that we're going to talk about on the program today, about the links between the Vatican, the Pope, the Jesuits, and this Black Lives Matter movement, which Rome is in full and complete support of. You just go online and type in Jesuits Black Lives Matter. You will find one article after another, after another, after another of Jesuits proclaiming their unconditional support for the radical Black Lives Matter movement in a way that's completely illogical and yet ignoring greater issues like the abortion industry, all of the unborn, partly born children in the black community being killed through the abortion industry, the fact that there are millions of blacks who are currently slaves in Africa today that get virtually no mention. There's an article out there where you have an African woman asking the question, what about slavery today? Why is nobody paying it? Why is everybody arguing about slavery from 1850 and nobody wants to talk about slavery happening right now in 2020? Asking the obvious question, one that we have asked many times on this program. It's just a big, huge distraction to talk about what went on in the 1840s and 50s because the people who are creating the distraction don't really care anything about slavery. They don't care. If they did, they'd be paying attention to modern slavery. They would not be pushing and promoting Islam as the Jesuits are when they know that the Muslims own millions of slaves across Africa and the Middle East, but they just keep pushing Islam and telling you you're an Islamophobe if you argue. Now I'm going to play you an audio clip. I want to play you an audio clip. This is from an interview with Gladsoff Gang, Jamie Gladsoff interviewing Dr. Charles Jacobs. Dr. Charles Jacobs, who is actively involved in modern times in trying to set slaves free in Africa. He travels to Africa to set modern-day slaves free from their Islamic slave owners. And here is part of an interview he did with Jamie Gladsoff on Gladsoff Gang. And the topic was, do black slaves' lives matter? And they're talking about the whole Black Lives Matter movement and the fact that many of the people who support the concept that Black Lives Matter don't seem to care that you've got so many blacks who are slaves in Africa today. Listen.
My view of this is really built and constructed by my own experience when I went to Sudan and I helped Christians liberate black slaves who were taken by the hundreds of thousands in a jihad by Arabs, Arab Muslims, against blacks. And Ben's point about when did liberals get woke was during that time when it was very hard for me to get a whole lot of black people caring about those black lives.
So you not only had a problem with getting Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch interested, but you have made efforts with Jesse Jackson, Al Sharpton, Louis Farrakhan. They all turned their back on the suffering black Africans that are enslaved, in many cases by Muslim Arabs.
I mentioned all the right people because it was the so-called human rights leaders, right, of Human Rights Watch and Amnesty International, who knew exactly what was going on. and who wrote articles about it, but they put them in the back of their files. I mean, Amnesty International could have filled the streets of America with protests against the enslavement of blacks in Africa. They didn't do it. They didn't care about it.
All right, now let me interject something here, and then I want to let him comment further, but he goes on to say about Amnesty International that really their focus was trying to radicalize young white people about the problems of America. You know, America's racism, America's history of slavery, etc., basically, is what he says in a nutshell. So in other words, they weren't interested in modern-day suffering of blacks in the slave trade. That's basically what he goes on to say. But then he goes on to talk about these black leaders that were mentioned earlier. Listen.
Jesse Jackson was, taking money from, Jesse Jackson was a friend of the American Arab Institute here in America, and he wasn't about to go after black Arab slavers because he was of his ties. Al Sharpton actually went to Sudan with us, and he was pretty upset when he saw the slaves. And he came back, and he was going to make a big thing out of it, and then Louis Farrakhan grabbed him and told him to shut up. Farrakhan, of course, is the biggest problem. He is the one black man standing in the way of liberating tens of, if not hundreds of thousands of black slaves in Africa. One word from Louis Farrakhan to his base, to the American population, as if I'm a leader of the blacks in the world, I've got to tell you the most important thing is to free black people today.
All right. Now, you're hearing this from a guy. If you go online and you look up Dr. Charles Jacobs and his organization, the American Anti-Slavery Group, which also works in partnership with Christian Solidarity International. I've not been able to figure out if Dr. Jacobs himself is a Christian. I'm not hearing that he is. That's not readily apparent. But he does work with Christian groups, and he speaks favorably about them. And, of course, the Christian groups are more than happy to help him provide money, to help him go and free thousands and thousands of slaves. This is a guy who actually goes to Africa with large amounts of money often and buys slaves and sets them free and purchases them from the Muslim slavers and sends them back to their families and so on. But notice what he's saying. This is why I've said I think Malcolm X was a fraud. I think Louis Farrakhan is a fraud. These guys don't care. Al Sharpton, apparently now, is a fraud. Of course, not a big surprise on Al Sharpton. He's been seen as a race huckster for many years. But here, notice what Dr. Jacobs says. He actually went to Africa, saw the slave trade being practiced by the Arabs there, the Muslims, was going to say something about it, and then apparently, according to Dr. Jacobs, Louis Farrakhan shut it down. And according to Dr. Jacobs, if Farrakhan spoke out about this, if the black leaders in America spoke out about this, they could inspire political action. I mean, think about it. If while Barack Obama, the first black president of the United States, while he was president, if black leaders stood alongside him and said, our foreign policy should be focused on abolishing slavery in Africa and setting these hundreds of thousands, ultimately millions of African slaves free, would that not have been a cause that most all Americans would have gotten behind? I think it's unquestionable that they would have, but no, they don't care. That's the thing that's just incredible. They don't seem to care. I mean, it's tragic, but remember this, when they want to try and make America feel guilty about slavery from 150 years ago, and they're looking for some kind of reparations payment. Remember this, brothers and sisters. Now, I want you to hear some audio from a modern-day person who is dealing with modern-day slavery in Africa. And bear this in mind, because groups like the Jesuits, do they know this is going on? You got to be kidding me. They know it probably better than most any other groups in the world. They know it very, very well, and yet they still support Islam at Georgetown University. And they still, as you're going to see, they try to shame America. Try to make America say, oh, that America was supposedly built on racism from the beginning and all this other kind of stuff. Wait till you hear some of these quotes. But before we get into that, we are working on finalizing the editing for the new film, The True Christian History of America, which, as we're sending out in our newsletter here, we're giving an update on that. The many of you have pre-ordered the film. We're very encouraged by that, and we're excited at the initial response. And we really hope and pray that this film will be a powerful testimony and a witness and encourage Christians in this country and around the world to stand up for our Christian heritage and the fact that it was Christian people, our God-fearing, Bible-believing Christian forefathers who established the principles of freedom. Things like freedom of religion, freedom of the press, freedom of conscience, etc. The right to bear arms, private property ownership, all of these were rights and liberties that were established really going back to just before the great Protestant Reformation. I say that because of Magna Carta, but then through the Reformation, these things were really hammered out and defended. And the Reformation played a huge role, as we're going to see in the film. But one of the figures that we talk about in this new film is Oliver Cromwell. Oliver Cromwell, who, if you study Cromwell, who was a Puritan and was very influential on the early colonies and especially during the American Revolution, we show you that because most people don't know this history. Now, what I find really fascinating is that Cromwell took God at his word. He believed God's promises, that when God says, don't fear other gods, but fear the Lord, obey God and his word, and he will deliver you from the hands of all your enemies, Cromwell actually believed that. And even though he was a man with no military experience, when the English Civil War broke out, he rose to become the greatest commander and defeated all of these professional armies, and ultimately fought armies all over England and Europe and prevailed every time when he was in charge. He ultimately prevailed against his enemies and went to his grave undefeated. As God says, as God's promise, no man will be able to stand before you all the days of your life, as God said to Joshua. And Cromwell believed these things. And so he's continually making references to the scripture. At one point, he writes in a letter, and he made reference to the story of Gideon and Gideon's defeat of the Midianites. And here, from this article, a letter from June 1648, Cromwell, he's writing about the conflict, and he says, quote, I pray God teach this nation what the mind of God may be in all this, and what our duty is. Surely it is not that the poor godly people of this kingdom should still be the objects of wrath and anger, nor that our God would have our necks under a yoke of bondage. For these things that have lately come to pass have been the wonderful works of God, breaking the rod of the oppressor, as in the day of Midian, not with garments rolled in blood, but by the terror of the Lord. Isn't that powerful? So he saw all the trouble that England was in with you know, the conflicts that led up to the English Civil War and so on, but he still believed, ultimately, he believed that he and other Englishmen should be seeking the mind of God and to seek out what our duty is. What should we do? What is our duty? And but he's talking about God pouring out his wrath on the oppressor and breaking the rod of oppression there in England. That's what he believed was really going on. And you think about what's happening in our country. There's so much that went on in the English Civil War and I think in the American Revolution that we can find parallels with today. All right, let's go to our commercial break and we will talk more when we come back right after this.
Adullam Films presents an exciting new documentary, Bridge to Babylon, part three in an award-winning series on the untold history of the Bible. Dr. Jack Moorman calls it a masterful presentation of what is the single most important issue facing Christians today, the defense of the Bible as the Word of God. Why was the Bible changed in 1881? Why have so many churches abandoned biblical inerrancy? And what direction are scholars taking the scriptures today? Learn the truth in Bridge to Babylon, the sequel to A Lamp in the Dark and Tares Among the Wheat. Bridge to Babylon is now available at noiseofthunderradio.com. That's noiseofthunderradio.com.
Hello, I'm Brandon House. In April of 2013, I found a Mountain House distributor and ordered some freeze-dried food for my family because I had become concerned about what was happening in America, our lack of national security, the threat to our power grid. I also knew, living in Memphis on the New Madryn Fault, that there is the possibility of an earthquake. I also know that ice storms can cause the power to go out here, not to mention the threat of terrorism. There were many reasons. So I contacted the company Mountain House and asked if I could become a distributor of their product. I had some of their food when I was in high school on a couple camping trips, and it's really good. But now Worldview Weekend has been approved to be a distributor for Mountain House. And if you're interested, you can now go into the bookstore at worldviewweekend.com/bookstore and check out some of the freeze-dried food that you can order. We have one pack that's available. It's a bucket of food, breakfast, lunch, and dinner for 14 days for one person. For more details, just simply visit our bookstore, worldviewweekend.com/bookstore, worldviewweekend.com/bookstore.
Noise of Thunder Radio.
Okay, we are back. Praise the Lord, you guys. I'm Chris Pinto. This is Noise of Thunder Radio. Thanks for staying with the show today. Today we're talking about the Jesuits, Black Lives Matter, and the American Gunpowder Plot. Now, why do I call this the American Gunpowder Plot? Because this modern movement with Black Lives Matter is openly declaring their desire to overthrow the United States. Here we're going to listen to an audio clip from a Portland Black Lives Matter organizer. She describes herself as an Afro-Indigenous, non-binary local organizer. Her name is Lilith Sinclair, and here's what she says. Listen very quickly.
Hi, everyone. As you know, my name is Lilith Sinclair. I'm an Afro-Indigenous, non-binary local organizer here in Portland, organizing for the abolition of not just the militarized police state, but also the United States as we know it. I want to make sure that while we are standing here on stolen land.
Okay, and we'll stop it there. So you heard what she said. It's a little bit muffled because of the crowd, but she basically says she's not just there to destroy the police state, but the United States of America as we know it, she said. Whatever that's going to mean, obviously, they're pushing for some kind of socialist, communist overthrow of our country from within. And then she goes on to say that they're standing there on stolen land. All right, so now let's talk about, with this, the many Jesuits and Catholic clergy that are involved with and supporting Black Lives Matter. You have the famous speech given by Sir Edward Coke, the lawyer who prosecuted the gunpowder treason, and he said, "I never knew a treason without a Romish priest." But in this, he said there were very many Jesuits. And he goes on to name all the Jesuits who were involved. You can find the same thing going on right now. I believe Rome, the Vatican, you study the situation with communism, you'll find the Jesuits and Rome at key places of influence, like in Rhodesia with Robert Mugabe. Mugabe had a Jesuit counselor the whole time, before, during, and after he was in power. He was helped by the Catholic Church to do what he was doing, because the Vatican is the wellspring of Marxism. this is why we go back to J.A. Wiley in 1881, who told us back then that the Jesuits use communism as a weapon against countries they are trying to control. So let's look at some headlines here. You have from the Jesuit School of Theology at Santa Clara University, Berkeley campus, their statement on Black Lives Matter. They say, quote, "It's well past time for the Jesuit School of Theology to state where our school stands on the value of black lives. Our nation has witnessed 2 weeks of relentless protest against the persistent racialized suffering of black Americans." Right? And then it goes on, it says, "The immediate spark was the murder of George Floyd by the Minneapolis police, but the United States was founded upon and its white citizens have prospered from 400 years of oppression of Africans and the people of African descent in so many guises," and on and on. I mean, just the entire anti-American, really anti-Protestant. This is why it's so important to understand that America was founded by Protestants, that our Constitution and our Bill of Rights and so on is political Protestantism, as Sam Adams said. Okay. And so this is very anti-American, anti-Protestant, arguing that, I mean, this is the Malcolm X argument, that Americans have prospered from 400 years of oppression of Africans, etc. It's just nonsense. It's complete nonsense. If you go and you study the number, for example, of black males who have been shot and killed by the police, for the last 3 years, the total number from 2017 to 2020, the total number is like 105. 105 for 3 years. That's about 35 black men a year are shot and killed by the police. Now, blacks, they're gangs and so on. Just go research the violence in Chicago. The black gangs are going to kill way more people than that. Wait, and just in one city. We have to remember that black males, who are 6% of the U.S. population, commit more than 50% of the homicides, the murders in our country. And yet there's only 35 of them at most per year, that's about the average, that are shot and killed by the police, even though they're members of gangs and they're into drugs and violence and all this other kind of stuff. But 35 a year, and they're likening this to the slave trade. They're likening this to, you've got 47 million black people in the country, right? 47 million. And there's 35 in the entire country. 35 black men are killed a year by the police. Of course, we don't like seeing anybody killed. We're not making light of it. But to make it out like it's this epidemic, that black men can't walk outside of their home without being hunted down by the cops and shot, is just a ridiculous and absurd exaggeration. It's absurd. The Muslims in Africa are going to kill more black people in the next month, probably, than are going to be killed by the police in this country in the next 20 years. You realize over a period of, let's just look at the Rwanda genocide. Since the Jesuits are speaking out on this, let's remember that the Catholic priesthood planned and orchestrated the mass murder of over 800,000 blacks in Rwanda with the Rwanda genocide. 800,000 blacks in 3 months, 100 days. And the Pope, Pope Francis, the Jesuit Pope, had to give an apology to the president of Rwanda, Paul Kagame, in 2017. You can actually go online and read that. That's officially true. That's not a conspiracy theory. So the Pope has admitted to the role of the Catholic Church in the mass murder of over 800,000 black people in Rwanda. 800,000. That's 1994. Now, you take the average of black males being shot and killed by the police in America, that's, what, 26 years ago, 1994 to today, it's less than 1,000 people. Less than 1,000 black men in 26 years have been killed. Over a period of 100 years, that would be about 3,500 black males shot and killed by the police over a period of 100 years, a century. This is not Holocaust level numbers, nothing even close to that. And yet they make it out like it's this ongoing Holocaust in America. Blacks being hunted down by the police and this kind of thing. I mean, it's just a ridiculous and absurd exaggeration that the communists are using. And yes, the Jesuits, they're one of these communist groups. I think they're the leading group, certainly one of the leading groups. Here's where you find a real deception. On the Jesuit Post, the value of human life, an African Jesuit reflects on the Black Lives Matter movement. Now, if you read that, it's very, very deceptive, especially an African Jesuit knows full well that the situation in Africa for blacks is far, far worse. They have far more problems in Africa with the Muslims. And yet here they're championing the Muslims as though they're these heroes or something, while they're out kidnapping, raping, enslaving, murdering people every single day. Okay, Jesuits.eu, take a knee. This is the headline. Take a knee in solidarity with Black Lives Matter. Then they have a photo of all these Jesuits. It says the photo shows members of the Edinburgh Jesuit community adding our prayer and a public gesture of solidarity to the Black Lives Matter movement taking place around the world. All these Jesuits take a knee. You know, I had a guy call me up, and he was talking about being in, I think he was in the Ukraine. He's one of our supporters. He supported our ministry for years. Wonderful, wonderful guy. He lives in Canada, and I think he said he was in the Ukraine. And he said in that part of the world, he's one of these Slavic countries, there aren't many blacks at all. That is very, very rare to see a person who's black. They have very, very few black people there. And yet he saw Black Lives Matter protesters out, and he was thinking, there's hardly any black people in there. There's like, they're not even 1% of the population. In fact, what he told me is that in this country, which I think was the Ukraine, that in this country, if they run into somebody who's black, they'll stop and take a picture with them because it's so rare that they would find somebody in their country who is black. And yet, there they are yelling Black Lives Matter in a country where there aren't even enough blacks for there to be a real problem. Okay. Okay, so then you have, here's another headline. BC students, Jesuits, hold Black Lives Matter demonstration. This is at Boston College, BC Boston College. They're in front of St. Ignatius Church, holding up signs for Black Lives Matter. America Magazine, the Jesuit Review. What Black Lives Matter can teach Catholics about racial justice. And then they've got a sign there, demilitarize the police. Okay, Black Lives Matter, showing all the radicals. Right? All over the place. Ignatian solidarity, Black Lives Matter, a reprise. National Catholic Reporter, we must all say Black Lives Matter. Everybody's got to say it. Yeah, so you've got all these articles. I mean, the Catholic Church and the Jesuits in particular. And Georgetown University, which is the Jesuit headquarters in Washington, D.C., at their Center for Social Justice Research. Remember, the Jesuits are the authors of social justice. The term social justice was coined by a Jesuit priest, Luigi Taparelli, in 1843. Let's remember that. 5 years before Marx published the Communist Manifesto. So, they issued a statement saying, quote, "Our hearts are heavy, our fists are clenched, our voices shout in unison, Black Lives Matter." Right? All the drama there, Black Lives Matter. Well, now, at Georgetown, where they've got the professor, the Muslim professor, who's teaching that slavery and rape are perfectly legitimate because they were practiced by the Prophet Muhammad. And Muhammad was supposedly the most perfect human being. This is what the Muslim professor teaches. And you cannot argue with the most perfect human being, can you? No, you can't argue. So therefore, you have to accept slavery and rape as being acceptable. I mean, this is what this guy taught at Georgetown University, where the Jesuits, just wrapping themselves in fraud, are now collecting money from the students to pay as a reparation for the fact that Jesuits owned slaves back in the 19th century. Then you've got the Jesuit Social Research Institute, the Dignity of Black Lives. You see, they've got all of this focus and all of this attention on racism, really just a whole variety of ways to engage in race baiting and to focus on why Black Lives Matter and we have to focus on Black lives and basically say all white people are racist because whites, I mean, if you break down what white is, white is 87% of the population. It's the entire non-Black population is considered white when you break it down, quite frankly. It's the vast majority of the country. So when they're talking about overthrowing white supremacy, what they're really talking about is overthrowing America, overthrowing the constitutional republic of our country. And of course, they even despise members of the Black community who support our Constitution. We see this all the time. They're telling people like Dr. Ben Carson and others that they're not Black because they don't support this radical ideology. So it's really not about race. It's very much about political activism. Now, here is a very, very revealing report from LifeSite News, which is a Catholic website. Let's bear that in mind. And they expose the fact that, here's the headline, quote, U.S. bishops caught funding radical groups supporting riots calling for death to police. That's the headline. Look that up. U.S. bishops caught funding radical groups. This is, remember, Rome, Vatican City, is a foreign country. For the bishops to be involved in this and the Jesuits, this is treason, folks. This is treason. They should be arrested. They should be deported. They should be, you know, taken out of this country and interrogated for why they are supporting a radical socialist communist group that is calling for the outright overthrow of the United States of America. This is political. It goes beyond just somebody's personal beliefs about something because they politicize this whole thing. And let's read the first paragraph in this article. It says, quote, a new investigation by the Lepanto Institute has revealed that the bishops in the United States, through their Catholic Campaign for Human Development, are funding organizations that support riots and whose goal includes not only defunding the police, but even killing them. Quote, unquote. That's what the article is reporting. Then we have an image here of the Jesuit Tom Rees. Tom Rees, who is who's supported actually by James Martin. These guys know each other. In fact, he refers to actually the tweet is given by James Martin, S.J., Society of Jesus. James Martin is the Jesuit who pushes heavily homosexuality in the churches, the Catholic Church in particular, but really he's targeting anything called the church. He's the guy who wrote the book about building bridges with the gay community and this kind of thing. He met with the Pope. Pope Francis had a meeting with him. The article reported that James Martin openly declares that the Bible is simply wrong on the issue of homosexuality. And it's important to remember that this whole Black Lives Matter movement is, it's not just about black lives. It's very much about homosexuality, transgenderism. And if you read the end of their statement of what they believe and who they are, when they use terms like intergenerational and wanting to get away from ageism, folks, that's pedophile talk. That is language from the pedophile community. And this whole thing is advancing the pedophile agenda more and more. In fact, they're becoming more and more radical about defending pedophilia as a right. And they're going to try and do it. They're going to try and push it eventually to legalize pedophilia. And I believe what they're going to do, if they follow the pattern of Kinsey and they follow what they've done with the other so-called gay rights, which really have no business in our country, they really have no business anywhere, but especially our country, where our entitlements are said to come from the laws of nature and of nature's God. Homosexual behavior is entirely unnatural. Thankfully, there's more and more people pushing back. More and more people pushing back. But anyway, so James Martin posts a picture of the Jesuit Tom Rees holding up a sign for Black Lives Matter. And Rees said, quote, "I'm going to spend today, the 46th anniversary of my ordination as a Jesuit priest, demonstrating that hashtag Black Lives Matter." Okay, and he's out there with two other priests. And they're saying, "We stand with George Floyd, racism, bigotry, hatred. I can't breathe, George Floyd," all of this kind of stuff. Okay. So very interesting. They're completely capitalizing on this idea. The Jesuit radicals are Marxists. They are socialists. They are communists. And that is what they want. And the plan to try and kill 25 million Americans, That is right up their alley. That fits in with the Rwanda genocide. That fits in with the Holocaust during World War II. That's why we carry the book, The Secret History of the Jesuits by Edmund Paris and their role with Hitler and the Nazis. This is why I call this a gunpowder plot, because the gunpowder plot was engineered for at least months, probably years, before they actually got Guy Fawkes there up under the Houses of Parliament to put those barrels of gunpowder and prepare to blow the Parliament sky high so they could overthrow the Protestant government of England. Okay? And all of the principles that overturned and put a stop to the Dark Age. Even England, with all of its imperfections, was still much freer. They had much more freedom than any Catholic country in Europe at that time. And so the idea of blowing up the Parliament, and they hoped, or it was said, that they were hoping to kill King James I. There are those who believe they also wanted to put a stop to the translation of the King James Bible, which would become the most important English translation of the Bible in history. So, as we know, as we've talked about in our series and so on, and really the best-selling book of all time. But the reason I call it the gunpowder plot, there's another reason. Because the original gunpowder plot was stopped. It was discovered, and it was overturned. And the conspirators were apprehended and punished. And that, I believe, is what really needs to happen here in our country. The problem is, right now, it does not appear that we have anybody in politics. I mean, certainly nobody in the Republican Party. The only person who might step up to the plate and do something would be President Trump, and with him people like Ted Cruz, and you would think some other conservatives, Senator Rand Paul, we would hope. But even at that, you know, it's so hard to say whether or not any of those men are actually willing to do what would need to be done to put a stop to this ongoing attempt at overthrowing our country. Because even now, if Trump is reelected in November, and we hope he will be, just because the alternative is, well, then it's like Joe Biden is going to drive the country off the cliff. Going to drive the country off the cliff. At least with Trump, there is some level of political resistance in Washington, however imperfect it may be. But unless I'm very wrong, at this point, I just don't see the Trump administration taking a really tough approach in the way that they need to. And I've said from the beginning that what Trump really should do is put together a military tribunal and start going after sanctuary city politicians, these radical leftist judges, lawyers, and members of the Democratic Party who are engaging in what can only be called sedition and treason against the country. That's what should be done. That's the only way I think that Trump could actually deal with this and go after Hillary Clinton and all of the swamp creatures there in Washington, who are really, I mean, this is deep state politics here. That's what we're seeing. This is what happens when you don't go after your enemies in a country. You let them flourish and run around and they get worse and worse and worse. I mean, studying the scripture, this is why I think it's so important to examine, you know, people like King Solomon. When Solomon's own brother Adonijah challenged his throne, Solomon had him swiftly judged and put to death. When King David had a guy named Sheba who challenged his authority and said, "We're not going to follow David," he had him apprehended. His head was cut off, and that was the end of it. But when you had kings like King Ahab, for example, when he refused to execute Ben-Hadad, who was his enemy and tried to overthrow him, when he refused to execute him, God sent a prophet to Ahab who said, "You see that man whom you let go? Your life shall go for his life and your people for his people, because you let go out of your hand one whom the Lord had appointed for destruction." The Bible says we must behold both the goodness and the severity of God. And governments that will not execute God's severity against the wicked, which is what they're appointed to do. That's what Romans 13 says. That government is the minister of God, a revenger to execute wrath against those who practice evil. And so when the government refuses to do that, they can end up losing their authority eventually. You look at what happened with the Tsar of Russia, although admittedly a lot of that history, the more I learn about what went on with the Bolshevik Revolution in Russia, and we call it the Bolshevik Revolution because the Russian people, I mean, I've seen articles and comments from them, they really don't like the idea of it being called the Russian Revolution. They don't like that at all. In fact, I recently heard a teaching from a minister who said that Alexander Solzhenitsyn, the great Russian writer, also rejected the idea of calling it the Russian Revolution because it wasn't really carried out by Russians. It was carried out by people who hated Russia and who hated the Russian people. That's why they mass murdered so many of them. And so they prefer to call it the Bolshevik Revolution. The Bolshevik Revolution. And we can see now in America, you look at these people who are saying, you know, down with America, America should never have existed, they're burning the American flag. Are these Americans? If somebody called the Black Lives Matter movement an American revolution, what would we say? We said, no, this is not a, you, this is not an American revolution. This, these are a bunch of communists. This is not an American revolution. These people are completely against everything that we believe. Now, further evidence of Rome's complicity in all of this, in the midst of the Black Lives Matter international radical movement. And you have to think, brethren, when you see a movement like this that's international, where they're having riots and they're tearing down statues in countries around the world, who has the ability to instigate that? It has to be people who have a network all over the world. And that's another link to the Vatican and the Jesuits and the Catholic leaders, because they've got churches, schools, colleges, and universities, thousands and thousands of them, all over the world. All over the world. So they can mobilize a radical movement like this very, very quickly. But now in Italy, church militant, who are conservative Catholics, they report homophobia bill sparks protest in Italy. Homophobia bill sparks protest in Italy. And the headline says that thousands of protesters across Italy are demonstrating against a draconian homotransphobia bill which threatens to criminalize the Catholic Church's teachings on homosexuality and transgenderism. Now, the official teachings of the Catholic Church are that this behavior is sinful and immoral in the sight of God. That's the teaching, really, of all any ancient form of Christianity, anything that had anything to do with the Bible, whether it's Roman Catholic, Greek and Russian Orthodox, all your Protestant groups, Lutherans, Calvinists, Methodists, everybody agreed all the way into the 20th century, any group, all the Protestant groups, Catholics, Greek, Russian, Orthodox, everybody agreed that homosexuality is immoral and a sin in the sight of God. There's never been any disagreement about that until you get to the end of World War II. And so it's post-World War II that you have all these shenanigans going on where people are making these ridiculous arguments from the Bible. So, but here's another interesting comment. It says, quote, prominent parliamentarians Matteo Salvini, who's known for being conservative, and he's against the massive flow of Muslims into the country and so on, Matteo Salvini and Vito Comencini from the Lega Party joined hundreds of Catholics and evangelicals in the Rome protest at Piazza Montecitorio Thursday, but the bishops were conspicuous by their absence. So, in other words, the Catholic bishops were nowhere to be found. They were not there to stand in solidarity. Why? Because the reality is that the Catholic bishops and the Jesuits want to advance homosexuality because ultimately the goal is the legalization of pedophilia. Now, we've been saying this for years. This is essentially what we showed to an audience. Now, of course, we showed it through the work of Alfred Kinsey going back in the 1940s and 50s, and the Kinsey Syndrome, our documentary, which you can watch. You can get a copy from us. You can order a copy from Adullam Films, or you can go online and watch it for free. In fact, there is a protest happening in Poland right now where you've got Polish leaders standing up and pushing back. They recognize openly that they are trying to push pedophilia in their education system there, and they're pushing back. And they're saying, no, this is we don't want this. And of course, they're being, you know, thrashed by the media for daring to question pedophile ideology at this point. This is, folks, I'm telling you, this is their ultimate end game with the entire LGBT movement. And parents and Americans, and really people everywhere in the world, Christian people, God-fearing Christian people, need to wake up and recognize this, because what they want to do is they want to empower homosexuals and the Muslims and ultimately the Catholic priests, that's their interest in this, to be able to molest children in such a way that there will be nothing the parents can do about it. And put the parents in a position where you as a parent will be prosecuted if you try to interfere with your child being violated by a pedophile. And they'll say that you're guilty of bigotry and discrimination based on sexual orientation. That's where they're headed with this whole thing. And that's why this bill there in Italy is so important. They want to criminalize anybody who speaks out against homosexuality. In Italy, the home of the Vatican, how could a bill like this get through the political channels there in Italy? How could it happen? I mean, the Italian people don't want this. There's no question about that. And if the bishops and the Pope said, no, there's no way you're doing this, we will excommunicate you. If you even suggested, you got to be kidding me. It would go nowhere. It would go nowhere. But they're not doing that. They've been pushing subtly, one step at a time, one step at a time. Pope Francis has been pushing homosexuality since he took office. Now, the red-green axis on this. The red are the Marxists. That's Rome. Rome represents Marxism, socialism, communism, etc. Now the green, Islam. They have the same interest. What has happened here recently, you have Erdogan, the leader of Turkey, has now declared that the famous Hagia Sophia, the Greek Orthodox Church that's been a point of controversy for centuries and centuries, that was captured by the Turks in 1453 with the fall of Constantinople, that it had been a mosque. They converted it into a mosque after Islam took over. Then it became a museum in the early part of the 20th century to appease the secular humanist approach, or the secular approach, we'll say, to Turkey, because Turkey, after they'd been beaten down by the United States and Great Britain through the Barbary Wars and World War I, they recognized they simply did not have the strength to resist Western powers. So to play along and be able to get money and knowledge and technology and weapons and stuff like that from the West, they had to adopt a secular form of government, which they did. But I honestly believe they did it because they wanted trade, money, and then knowledge of technology, modern technology, weapons, all these weapons of war that the West had developed that basically overwhelmed the Islamic world. They had no chance anymore of invading the Christian countries of the Western world because they just became too powerful. So what they've been doing is learning Western technology, weapons, guns, bombs, fighter jets, all the rest of it, preparing for when they will resume their jihad. And people have believed that Erdogan has been the Islamic agent to move them in that direction. And that's, you know, that's why this whole Hagia Sophia issue is so important. But with that, you have the Vatican, while everybody else is outraged by it, here you have a Jesuit at the Vatican, the Jesuit Felix Korner, consultor to the Vatican Commission for Religious Relations with Muslims, maintained that the reclassification of Hagia Sophia as a mosque, quote, should not be put down to the current Islamic aggression. Quote, it is about an attempt at self-profiling by President Erdogan, Korner, who teaches Islam at the Pontifical Gregorian University in Rome, told domradio.de. Korner also suggested that Christians should actually be happy that the Hagia Sophia will once again be used for prayers after 85 years as a secular museum. You see, we should be happy, we're being told by this Jesuit, we should be happy that Islamic Antichrist prayers are going to be prayed from what had once been the most famous church in the world. The Hagia Sophia used to be. I mean, it's really a grand structure. It's spectacular. Christian, you know, Eastern Orthodox Christian architecture, etc. And now it's been claimed by the Muslims for the last 500 years. They had turned it into a museum. Now it's going back to being a mosque. And the Jesuit is telling us we ought to be happy about that. Folks, this is Jesuitical sophistry. If you ever wanted to know what it looks like, that's what it looks like. When you have something that's absolutely outrageous and ought to stir up every Christian in the world to recognize the danger, because they're going to keep doing this. They're going to keep doing this whole toleration. Let's all just get along. Let's coexist and this kind of thing. While really coexistence is nothing more than giving an opportunity to the enemies of Christianity and the West to advance their agenda into the Western world and ultimately take over. They're not looking for some sort of equality. This is why we spend so much time talking about South Africa. The situation in South Africa with the communists saying that, oh, well, Mandela and his fellow blacks, they just want equality with the whites. No, that's never what they wanted. It starts with a declaration of tolerance and equality, but then they systematically move in to try and take over everything, destroy the opposition, drive them out, and become the complete conquerors of the land. That's what they want. And this is what the red-green axis wants in the Western world. They want to conquer all of these Western countries and put them under some kind of system. And I freely admit, I don't fully understand where they're headed with this completely. We know that they're using socialism and they're using Sharia law. At some point, those two systems are not going to get along. They're not going to cooperate with each other beyond a certain point. Right now, they are cooperating because they're employing the philosophy, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. That's the philosophy that they're employing if they get what they want, God forbid. Again, this is why we refer to this as a gunpowder plot. The gunpowder plot was overthrown. And we hope with God's help that this plot to overthrow America will also be put down, exposed fully for what it is, and that patriots will reclaim this country under God and for the glory of God. And may there be a mighty reformation in this country, a reform to turn away from this idolatry and immorality that's being taught back to the God of the Bible and to the Christian faith of our forefathers, those who truly believed the gospel of our Lord Jesus Christ. We hope and pray it may be so. All right, brethren, that is it for us today. That is our show. We'll stop it there, but we will be back next time as the Lord leads us. Until then, God bless you guys. I'm Chris Pinto, and you've been listening to Noise of Thunder Radio.